to go to the new apartment. But maybe because of the quality of that sequence, as much like the one where he takes the bus to the new building, it too could be a dream sequence, and that's something that's not really happening or not happening in the way that it's being shown.
I think it's an ambiguous ending. I think you can take it either way.
Okay. Oh, any further thoughts on either the book or the film?
No, I think that, I think both are worth looking into, but I certainly think that at this point, to me, Ratcatcher seems like a terrific first film. And
oh, yes.
I'm hoping that maybe she'll, you know, do something after all of the stuff that will come back to that. But her, you know, if you look at Kuhn, what she's talking about is repetition and circularity, and Ramsey does a lot of repetition in Ratcatcher. You know, there are a lot of themes that come back in different ways. So perhaps she will use that later on in her filmmaking career and do it in a different way.
Okay, good. And you know, it's available on a Criterion Collection disc with all sorts of extras and supplementary material for people who are interested in watching it. And also, you really do need to turn on the subtitles.
Oh, you absolutely need to turn on the subtitles. There's no way to understand this. And that's one final point. Ramsey is an amazing director of non-professional actors.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
These are all clearly untrained actors, but there's not a weak performance there. It's a beautifully acted film, that's definitely her direction.
Some viewers may recognize the father, who's played by Thomas.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Welcome to KBOO.
I want to see you grow. Welcome to KBOO. I'm Michael Van Cleek, Vice President of the KBOO Board of Directors. Are you passionate about KBOO Community Radio and its mission? Do you want to use your skills and experience to contribute to the governance of the station? Consider applying to the Board of Directors. Learn more about how to become a KBOO Director by attending a virtual information session. Virtual meetings are being held from now through June. Black, Indigenous, and people of color are especially encouraged to apply. For the schedule of information sessions, visit kboo.fm/board recruiting. Thank you for considering board service for KBOO Community Radio.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast by the Joint Office of Homeless Services focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and the services available to help people move out of homelessness and back into housing. If you need help connecting with shelter, housing, or other services, please call 211 or go to 211info.org for the most updated information. On this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, we feature the new data dashboard put out by the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Data is more than just numbers. It helps our community move toward the goal of solving homelessness by identifying trends and informing policy. The Joint Office has built a new data dashboard built on a by-name list of people experiencing homelessness in Multnomah County. That data lets us see not just the number of people experiencing homelessness, but also how that number changes over time and how effective services are at helping people leave homelessness for permanent housing. The new Homeless Services Data Dashboard marks a milestone that will significantly enhance our understanding of who is experiencing homelessness with the most accurate by-name list of people experiencing homelessness that Multnomah County has ever produced. This is information that benefits the public, journalists, policy teams, and elected leaders while serving the goals of transparency and accountability. The dashboard provides a monthly snapshot of how many people are experiencing homelessness, along with demographic data and information on how many people are in shelter or on the streets. The dashboard also shows how many people enter and leave homeless services each month. Additionally, it provides monthly services data, including information on how many people are staying in shelters, where people go when they leave shelter, and what percentage of people who leave homelessness for housing remain in their new homes. This is all part of Multnomah County's long-term investment in data-driven solutions. Better data helps us align housing and shelter resources, target outreach, and evaluate what's working. This dashboard is a tool for coordination, transparency, accountability, and action. It helps frontline workers, decision makers, and the community work from the same page. To learn more about the data dashboard, I spoke with Lori Kelly from the Joint Office of Homeless Services.
I wonder if you could just start by introducing yourself and your role at the Joint Office.
Absolutely. I'm Lori Kelly. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the Planning and Evaluation Manager at the Joint Office, or the Homeless Services Department, as we're calling ourselves. And that means that I work with the data team, with evaluation experts, and I also work with community advisory structures and do some special initiatives like health and housing intersection.
Great. And let's talk about the data team. And could you explain what that team does and what the importance of the data team is for the work of the Homeless Services Department?
Absolutely. So the data team is sort of broken out into two arms. There's administration of the Homeless Management Information System, otherwise known as HMIS, and that is the system in which we enter all data around homeless service provision in order to report to HUD and to other entities, but also in order to track people's progress as they're moving through our systems to get towards hopefully permanent housing. The other arm of the homeless services group creates reports from this database. So they are an analytics group. And so there's multiple data analysts who will take data from our multiple systems and turn them into reports that will allow us to see how we're doing in outcomes and in outputs, meaning how much we're doing and how well we're doing.
And right now the data team is feverishly working to complete the data dashboard. And I understand that that is going to be a dynamic dashboard. And I wonder if you could talk about what that dashboard is and what it's going to show.
Absolutely. So in the past, we've had a couple different data reports that all come together to do reporting for public consumption. So we've had these system performance reports that come out regularly on Tableau. We've had by name lists coming out through Built for Zero, which have been flat files where you can see outcomes. And then we've had a smattering of other reports around shelter utilization. What this dashboard will do, will pull all of those together in a much more dynamic space. And what that means is you can click through the different buttons and see how we're doing from a population standpoint. What that means is how many people through our system we believe are experiencing homelessness. And you can filter that by chronic homelessness, by age, by gender, by demographics in order to understand the population a little more effectively. That will also mean that you can look at inflow and outflow. And what we mean by that is people who are new to our system and people who are leaving our system. The dashboard will also include output and outcome metrics on housing, shelter, and prevention. And so it will have everything ranging from shelter occupancy and number of people being served in shelters, all also filterable by demographics, as well as how many people we're serving in prevention, how many people we're serving in different types of housing, how many people are housed effectively, and how many people are waiting for housing inside our programs. And then also it will have things like a shelter map and information around retention rates around housing. And the dynamic part is that each of these areas, for the most part, will be something that you can look at and filter to look at trends. You can filter them to look at demographics, and you can filter them over time to kind of get a sense of how we've been doing over time.
And how far back does the data go?
I believe the data, well, it depends on the dashboard. The population dashboard, it will go back a year and we'll continue to add years after that. That is because we are setting a timeline starting with the IGA that was associated with the Homeless Response Action Plan. So we took basically a pulse in January 2024, and we'll be doing that going forward.
The IGA is the
intergovernmental agreement. Yes, the intergovernmental agreement with Portland. Yes.
But that's between the city of Portland and Multnomah County.
Exactly. So at that time, they asked us to set some benchmarks around how many people are experiencing homelessness. And we clarified that it's kind of hard to do that without knowing who's experiencing homelessness. But then also there's a lot more going into who's experiencing homelessness than how many people are currently homeless and how many people are being housed. There's people becoming homeless. So this will help them track that. So we're starting that timeline around then. We're also starting that timeline around them because with the rapid escalation of services that we've had over the last several years, and the fact that this data is coming from service provision, the data is, for want of another term, noisy in past years. It includes a lot of ups and downs, and you'll even see that the data increases in the next year, perhaps, because of data excellence, not necessarily because of new people experiencing homelessness. So we're trying to triangulate around a space where we can tell a clear story, not just give information. The other thing that's the other data will go back 4 years.
So the data that goes back 4 years, that's the number of people served in shelters and what other data is going back to that extent?
Shelters, people who have been housed either through rapid rehousing or permanent supportive housing, people served in those programs. You'll also be able to go back several years in prevention data. We have data that goes back far longer than that, but we found that if you do really, really long longitudinal data, it doesn't tell a really clear story, and it's also hard to read.
And maybe you could explain a little more about the retention rate. So that is tracking people over time who've gotten into housing to see if they've managed to keep their housing?
Exactly. So in the past, we have had retention rates both for permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing. So they look a little different in that rapid rehousing subsidies end and we track retention afterwards, whereas PSH tends to be ongoing, so we're seeing just how well we're doing from the moment they're housed. Either way, in the past, the way we looked at this data is we had people call and follow up. This was a problematic way of measuring because, as you can guess, especially in rapid rehousing, you can't always find people or get a hold of people. Some people have moved to other housing and we wouldn't necessarily find it. So what we've done instead is we've added that measurement plus another measurement, which is by looking at our by name list, how many people are flowing into homelessness. If people flow back into homelessness, we see them in a service that indicates they're homeless again, we're also able to figure out that they are no longer stably housed. And we can kind of make that metric that much more sensitive. So we're picking up a much larger group of people overall. So the metrics will be showing that new measurement over time. And we will, in Dashboard Part 2, also be applying that methodology to prevention.
When you say applying that methodology to prevention, could you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. We are going to be seeing how many people who have gotten prevention dollars, meaning they reached out when they were not stably housed, but housed, and let us know that they needed money of some level, and received it. We are going to be looking at whether they retained that housing after they received that subsidy.
Over what period of time?
The same periods of time that we will be looking at retention in other areas. So that's 12 and 24 and 48. But the 12 and 24 will be on the dashboard. I don't believe 48 will be.
12 months.
12 months and 24 months. Sorry. Yes. And those are the standard timelines. People tend to look at retention simply because it's after that it becomes a little more complicated to see whether something so long ago really had an impact or if something else. Like in that time, you know, if somebody is 4 years out, they may reach out again for retention. So it becomes a little more complicated, and then you can kind of see the impact in real time within a two-year period.
So the question is whether a person has entered homelessness in those 12 or 24 months.
Yes.
And you determine that by whether they have entered the system in another way, asking for services?
Exactly. Have they shown up asking for housing? Have they shown up in a shelter system? I mean, if they show up in a shelter system, we have meaningful reason to believe they are no longer stably housed.
And could you explain a little more about why it is so difficult to determine the number of people experiencing homelessness at any given time?
Well, simply because they're people. So people move around and change. I mean, if you do inventory on boxes, you know where they are and you know who moves them, and it's a very simple thing to calculate. But human beings have to consent to have their information shared. They have to enter some sort of system or have some sort of interaction with a person in order to get that data. And we avoid taking data just for data's sake, as in census data, simply because this is a pretty stigmatized situation that a lot of people are in. And running people down for data that we can't offer services attached to isn't considered to be best form. Also, you're less likely to get accurate information because there's no exchange. So our data is a natural byproduct of people seeking services or being approached with services in a variety of ways, which range from housing programs to outreach, so people out on the street. One of the things we are working on right now with Community Solutions, who does something called Built for Zero, is trying to figure out, do we talk or in some way, shape, or form to 90% or more of the homeless population? And that's a critical number because that means that we have a reason to believe our service data is mostly accurately reflecting the homeless population. And the more we reach out, the more we know that our data reflects the census. We already know that this methodology picks up far more people than the point in time count.
And can you explain the difference between the point in time count and the by name list that that is being developed and shown in this dashboard?
Absolutely. So the point in time count is something that's required by Housing and Urban Development every other year. Actually, it's required every year, but the street count is required every other year. So what happens during the point in time count is that we have a group of people across the city reach out over the course of a week and ask people where they were sleeping if they run into them on the streets on a particular night. So it's a point in time, and the time is that night. And then we then compile that information and we report it to HUD. We report three things to HUD now. We report how many people were in shelters that night. So we deduplicate from people that we talk to on the street to make sure that there's not somebody who we talked to and then they went into a shelter. We report the amount of unsheltered individuals that we talked to over that week. And then we have a new methodology we've added in, which is a percentage of the by name list that we are confident was not sheltered on that particular night as well. We call that administrative data. This is not as common a practice. Some places just stop short of the street count and the sheltered count, but we do it because we want to give a much more holistic view of what's going on in homelessness. It does consequentially make our counts pretty high, but even the point in time count looks lower than our overall list because the overall list is able to look over a nine-week period and triangulate around who's currently homeless and then also looks at episodic interactions over the course of years to really understand if people are homeless or not. It's just a much more sophisticated method.
Sorry, the overall list looks over a period of 9 weeks.
Well, so that was not very clear. So I will clarify. So basically, we have something called a 90-day inactivity policy on our by name list. And what that means is that if nobody has had an interaction with somebody over 90 days, and they are not enrolled in a program. So if they're enrolled in a program where they're waiting for housing, we assume they're still homeless. We put them into something called inactivity. There's a couple reasons for that. One is we can't say with confidence where somebody is if we haven't spoke to them within 90 days. And the other is that this list is intended to be used for things like case conferencing and prioritizing people for services. And so it's really looking at people who are actively engaging in the system and helping people understand and find people so they can do their work. So what happens is they don't disappear. They run into an inactivity list, and you'll see on our by name list that there is something that says exist inactivity. So that's different than access to housing, right? And we track that. We also do inflow from inactivity. The general rule would be two things. The more people we talk to, the more frequently, the lower the inactivity. You can imagine why. And the second thing is that the larger the list, meaning the larger number of people you're trying to track, the higher the inactivity, and you can probably imagine why then too. So if you're tracking very concernedly a small group of veterans, inactivity is very low. Right, because you can make sure that you're talking to them. If you're tracking, 7,000 people have experienced some kind of homelessness over a year, inactivity kind of gets higher because people flow in and out. The list we use for the pick count is a little shorter in activity space just because we want to make sure we're really matching a date to a date. But in general, that's how that works.
I wonder how people's data is protected in our local system, because that may be a worry for people in the community.
That's a good question. So first off, one of the reasons we keep it in HMIS versus just a spreadsheet or a database is because there's a variety of privacy protections that we're able to put in there, and we're not required to turn over data in any particular way inside this database. In some cases, however, there are multiple efforts to guard privacy. For example, if somebody is in a domestic violence situation, they go into a separate comp site, which is further protected and less likely to be shared. And in the same way, we do not require people to give their legal name in order to be on this list. We do request or hope that they will give a name that allows them to be regularly found, meaning they can be Marilyn Monroe every time they talk to us. But that makes, we don't require people to show their legal ID, for example, to get services. This is something that we do to let people know that they can engage and move towards resolving homelessness and resolving all the other issues that they have that are associated with homelessness without having to worry about us taking their real name and so forth. And, you know, I'm potentially like stigmatizing information and all that you're describing. It's also something that we think about, and when people are trained to use HMIS, they are clear that they're not supposed to share their logins, they're not supposed to share information on HMIS with anybody else. In fact, it's locked down enough that pretty much everybody in the joint office does not have access to HMIS because we don't do direct service. So it's really a very specific protocol. I will say this as well, if somebody's signing a lease, their name's probably getting onto a lease, and that's a space where you might have a little bit less privacy protocols in place because, you know, there's a lot of landlords that require legal information. That is not kept in our system, but they are more likely to have more accurate identifying information at that time.
And is the HMIS list with the names that are on it shared with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development?
Theoretically, they do have access to you, yeah, but in general, we mostly share aggregate reports with them. So yeah, they'll get information based on that list, but not like lists of people on a regular basis. So it is locally maintained, as you said, in the Portland area, which includes Clackamas and Washington County. Multnomah County maintains this database that reports to HUD and also produces our supportive housing services reports and other reports that are qualified. So yes, it is maintained within the county. It is operated by a private vendor at this point in time. That vendor is WellSky, although we're currently in the process of procuring a vendor that does an expanded group of services attached to the HMIS. But yes, so we have our own lockdown around that data.
And just to get back to the dashboard itself, it's about to go public. We're going to see a visual of all of these data points that you've mentioned. I wonder if you could talk about what people can expect when the data dashboard is live. What is it going to look and feel like? What kind of graphs will they be able to see? You mentioned demographics, that you'll be able to sort by demographics. So maybe just explain a little bit about the dashboard itself and what people can expect.
Absolutely. So, and I wish I could show you in pictures because it's hard to describe a picture, but effectively we're looking for a very user-friendly site that has a lot of definitions. It has line charts and bar charts, depending on what kind of data we're sharing. All of those line charts and bar charts, except for a couple of very high-level ones that show a snapshot, just so people can know what's going on overall, will be filterable by a variety of demographics so you can look and feel and play with the data. The dashboard is organized in a way where the highest level of data is at the top. So if you just want to know the number of people experiencing homelessness, it takes a second. If you are somebody who's like, now that I know that, I want to know more, you can scroll down the page on and click through, as I would say, and be able to filter. There will be tabs at the top that will allow people to move between population, services, and different types of services and go back very easily. There will be glossaries so people understand what our terms mean. Sometimes they're intuitive, sometimes they're not. And we're having them reviewed by a variety of communications experts to try to make them as easily digestible as possible, meaning you don't have to geek out on data like I geek out on data to understand what you're reading.
And any insights into what the preliminary data on the dashboard shows?
I don't want to do that. And part of the reason I don't want to do that is because I feel like that one is, you know, a fun spoiler you can wait for the month for. But the other is there's often a lot of details behind it. But we will be having some press releases and so forth right before we release that really talks about what we're seeing in the data. I did mention that sometimes you will see changes, ups and downs with population data that reflect are broadening data excellence and not necessarily the number of people experiencing homelessness. One other thing you will see that is that we continue to increase the amount of people we're housing and sheltering on a regular basis. I love seeing that. You can already see that in our system performance reports, but now you can see it all in one place.
Can you explain data excellence?
Absolutely. So I'm using that term quite broadly, but in general, what I mean is that we are moving towards a state of greater data maturity, which is also not a term you might be familiar with. But effectively, what that means is we have a very robust quality assurance plan. We have increasingly larger amounts of programs and spaces in which we collect data. And we have protocols in place to make sure our data is up to date, accurate, and reflects the populations and the services that we're serving. So it's really just bringing us to a space where our data has more meaning and is much more accurate.
I really appreciate you taking the time to share with us. Is there anything else that you think is important for people to know about this data dashboard that is about to be released publicly on the Homeless Services Department website?
I think just critically that we track data with the intent of continuously improving our services. And so the data often shows data that we understand to be meaningful in order to do that work. There's more detail and more specificity behind this data that we use internally to do programming and reporting. And so that's not everything we track everywhere. It's things that we think the public would like to know that allow us to be transparent and allow us to be honest about how things are going. But we have a lot of data that informs the data you see that we're able to use internally to really do great work. So I think people should know that.
Well, thank you so much. Again, I've been speaking with Lori Kelly with the Homeless Services Department, also known as the Joint Office of Homeless Services. Thanks, Lori, for speaking with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
To end the show today, we're going to share some excerpts from a couple of videos produced by the incredible youth videographers at Outside the Frame about the work of the Joint Office of Homeless Services and featuring providers like Do Good Multnomah and the recently opened Marie Equi Center, which provides a day center for queer and trans adults experiencing homelessness in our community. You can find these and other videos on the Joint Office website at johs.us/videos.
My name is Katie Cox. I use they and she pronouns. I'm the executive director and co-founder of the Marie Equi Center. We do trans and queer health access from a very holistic perspective, and our services are very tailored to work specifically with unhoused and low-income LGBTQAI2S+ folks. For many years, I mean, as long as I've been involved with this organization since around 2016, we've worked with a lot of folks who have moved here to Portland specifically from red states seeking access to care. This space is really created to centralize as many services as possible that are safer and affirming and culturally specific to trans and queer identities, because right now there's not really a space that exists like that for LGBTQ adults. This is our new center. We will have inclement weather shelter in this space. We also have space for just hanging out, letting your nervous system regulate. And we have a peer services area where we'll have community health workers and certified recovery mentors that work one-on-one with folks, offering peer support, services and systems navigation, gender-affirming care referrals, health education, recovery support, harm reduction, and basic wound care.
I just got here a day and a half ago. For the first time in many years, I feel very safe. I'm 67 years old, and I'm too damn old to be out here. But as long as I got good people, like where I'm at right now, I'll make it.
The idea behind transitional housing is to get people from an emergency shelter setting to transitional housing to permanent housing. Low barrier has been a lifesaver to a lot of people.
You need time to acclimate. It's almost like getting out of jail after getting out of a shelter or getting out of homelessness. You have to acclimate.
When I first moved here 3 years ago, there was no 24-hour shelters. You'd have to wake up at 6 a.m. every day and they'd kick you out and you're soliciting. But now we can be self-sufficient. We can cook, we can clean, we have our privacy, we can decorate and all.
Yeah. Decorate.
These people put their hearts out for us.
We lead with kindness. So even people that come off the street, we don't stop them at the door and go, no, you can't come in. We go, come on in. Let's get you a cup of coffee. Let's get you warmed up. Is there a resource that we can get you? It's how you approach people and how you talk to people, it makes 100% difference.
I was in the hospital in there for about a week here about February last year. And when they were getting ready to release me, I didn't have a place to go to at the time.
I would go right over here and I'd go up the elevator.
We want to see people get into their house and not just get you housed. It's not about numbers. It's about making it last.
My tent got ripped off, everything in it. And I was at my last limb, and I was done. Jumping off the bridge was really a thought process that I was kept on going through. So do good, save my ass. I went there, and they said, come on in. I was like, are you saying I can stay here tonight? And they said, yeah, you can stay here.
Those were excerpts from videos produced for the Joint Office of Homeless Services by Outside the Frame, which provides training in video production for youth experiencing homelessness in our community. You can find out more about their work at otfpdx.org. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland. This podcast is produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the city of Portland, Metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching for Out of the Streets of Portland. And you can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, johs.us.
This is KBOO Portland. Yeah!